The oral law is not oral anymore, but it's written because it was compiled into Mishnah and Talmud. But that's not really true. It's true that it was compiled, but it's not true that it's not oral. In order to understand the Talmud, in order to understand the Mishnah, it's critical to have a Masorah, to have a tradition of how to learn it. If a person just opens it up, even if you have a Sincino translation, it's very difficult to understand. I need to have a tradition. In Torah, there is not only the brilliance of the teacher, but also his connection to tradition. And every generation has its brilliant Talmidei Chachamim who are also part of a Masorah, part of the tradition, unbroken tradition back to Sinai. Rav Berkowitz learned from my Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Ruderman, who learned from Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, who had an unbroken tradition all the way back to the Vilna Gaon and beyond, all the way back to Sinai. So in addition to Rabbi Berkowitz's unquestioned brilliance and his recognition as Talmid Chacham throughout the world, he's also a person who connects us to the tradition and gives us a small insight into the complexity, intricacies, and authenticity of Torah Sheba'al Peh. I want to hear the shiur, even though I have much more to say.
Welcome to everyone. The Gemara speaks about a Bar Be'Rav D'Chad Yuma. Bar Be'Rav D'Chad Yuma literally would mean a yeshiva bacher for a day. The Gemara describes a person who traveled miles and miles to come to a yeshiva, spent a day there, and then traveled back. And the Gemara makes a point that it's a tremendous expression of that person's appreciation of learning that he should invest to travel so much, so far, to be able to be in a yeshiva setting, in a Beis Medrash setting, even for one day. So I think what you've demonstrated today is very, very special. And we're hoping that it's the beginning of a series and not just a random event. The Mishnah tells us, and the Gemara explains this, that we're not allowed, the Rabbanan made a halacha, you're not allowed to have monetary transactions. It's not even limited to monetary transactions. You can't have transactions on Shabbos and Yontif. And there's reasons why the Rabbanan made such a halacha, that you can't make a sale, you can't have even gifts, can't have transactions on Shabbos. So the shaila that was asked to Rabbi Akiva Eger was, if somebody designs a transaction in a way that whatever needs to be done was done before Shabbos, and the actual finalization of the transaction will happen on Shabbos with no physical involvement of the parties, it will just happen by itself. And there is a way to design that the halacha recognizes, that a transaction could be set into place and at a later date everything happens without any physical involvement. Is such a thing mutter on Shabbos? Do we understand that even though in fact there's a transaction happening on Shabbos, and by definition every transaction is man-made, but since the people are not actively involved in the transaction when it's being finalized, it's mutter? Or do we say that included in this halacha that you can't make a transaction on Shabbos, even if you were to design it in a way that you don't physically have to be involved, it's what the Rabbanan said you're not allowed to do? So he was asked this question. He was also asked another question. If you set up a transaction that is going to really be a transaction that's supposed to be finalized before Shabbos, but you attach something to it, a condition, you're able to make transactions that are pending a condition being fulfilled, but when the condition is fulfilled, the transaction retroactively is complete, so it comes out that the person made a transaction before Shabbos, but it was pending something happening on Shabbos. So what happens on Shabbos is really something that was just added on to the transaction but is not the actual transaction, is that also something that's mutter? So these are two questions that were asked to Rabbi Akiva Eiger. So I'm going to focus just on the first question. If you set up a transaction to happen on Shabbos without any more involvement, is that a problem? So Rabbi Akiva Eiger discusses this shaila. He goes through a Gemara proving from different questions in the Gemara whether it is allowed or is not allowed. But in understanding the question, later commentaries are bothered with the question, because we have a halacha, so machlokes beis shammai beis hillel, that there are many things that a person could set up before Shabbos, actually set into motion before Shabbos, and things continue to develop and happen on Shabbos, which Beis Shammai says some things you're not allowed to do, and Beis Hillel says you're allowed to do. Now, simply an example, a person puts up a pot of raw food to cook, and it cooks for a number of hours. So without getting into the intricacies of certain dinim derabanan that we're concerned that a person might do something on Shabbos, but in a situation where there is no room for any more involvement, Beis Hillel says you can set something up and things will just happen on Shabbos and you're totally removed and it's fine. So the Mishnah speaks about soaking certain things that with time, whatever the desired effect happens. And there are many examples, setting traps that will trap creatures. So as long as you don't have any particular concerns of being involved on Shabbos, the trap will do its work for you and you're enjoying Shabbos. So Beis Hillel says it's not a problem. So what bothers some achronim is, why does Rabbi Akiva Eiger consider setting up such a transaction to happen on Shabbos any different than any other setup where you set things into motion and it happens by itself without human involvement? They both seem to be the same. In both instances, whatever needs to be done was done. Whatever is going to happen is going to happen. Why is one of them clearly mutter and one is a question? So in dealing with this question, so the Avnei Nezer was also asked this question about Rabbi Akiva Eiger, and is also, I have here the Marshag, as he was a Hungarian Rav, his name was Shem Greenfield, a very chasha, big, it doesn't need my haskama, but you read the Sefer and you see how great he was. They both deal with this question. What makes this different? Now, the particular shaila of the Marshag was, is a person allowed to have a vending machine that's sitting in a public area that's available for Goyim to come and purchase on Shabbos? And he describes what more or less is our type of a vending machine. He describes you're selling chocolate and whatever it is, candies, and you put in the money and you open the box and take out the item. So the vending machine is sitting in the street. It's not in the property of a Jew. It's owned by a Jew. He owns what's in there. You have the place where you put the money and you take out whatever it may be. So there's a transaction happening on Shabbos. So his question is, can I have such a setup where I have a vending machine? I own whatever's in the vending machine. It's my candy, whatever it may be. The money that's being put there is there to pay for the item. The guy takes the item becomes his. A transaction is happening without the owner's involvement. Is that going to be mutter? So this question that the Marshag was asked, he says, we first have to discuss what Rabbi Akiva Eiger asks as a question, because this seemingly is the same question. The question over here is, there's a transaction happening on Shabbos. Now, it's not exactly the same thing as Rabbi Akiva Eiger, because nothing before Shabbos was really put into place besides access. The machine was accessible. It was put out Erev Shabbos. The guy can come whenever he wants put in the money and take out whatever's in there. But as far as the transaction itself on that particular candy bar, nothing really happened yet. The owner put it in a position where he's ready to let customers pay and take it. But the transaction really begins on Shabbos, but there is no physical involvement of the owner on Shabbos. That was the Shaila presented to the Marshak. So in discussing his Shaila, he tries to first break down the question of Rabbi Kiva Eger, trying to understand what exactly is the question. Again, he's addressing this question of what about all the cases in Maseches Shabbos where you can set up things, basically mechanisms that will do your work and it does it for you on Shabbos and it's not a problem. Why is this different than any other mechanism? And that's the question that the Avnei Nezer also addresses. Now when the Avnei Nezer speaks about the question, he presents it to a certain degree in a very black and white way. He makes the following distinction. If a person sets a trap that can trap creatures on Shabbos, and the person died, the trap does its work. You don't need this person to be alive for this contraption, this machine, to be able to do what it's supposed to do. So he is totally detached from whatever's going to happen. When you're dealing with a situation where you set up a transaction to happen, the person who is, we'll call it the seller, he needs to be alive at the time when the transaction is supposed to be finalized. Because if he's not alive at that time, then the transaction will not go through, because the transaction always requires two parties, so you need two parties. So it's true, he's not physically involved, he's not actively involved, he's not thinking about it, but his existence is needed for the transaction to happen. So in terms of understanding why there's even a question, should this be allowed, should it not be allowed, I am detached from the transaction as much as I am detached from the trapping an animal. The Avnei Nezer makes the point, it's not exactly comparable. It's true that you're not physically involved, you're not involved in any form of thought, speech, etc. But to say that he's not party to the transaction is not 100% true. He is a party, one of the two parties that are needed for the transaction, because it can't happen without two parties. So true, it's a valid question that maybe the Rabbanan only cared about active involvement in the transaction, but you can't simply answer that the answer is yes, it's mutter, because it's clear in the Gemara and Shabbos that when you're not involved, there's no problem, because the lack of involvement in Shabbos is different than the lack of involvement here, because here you are passively involved, because you represent you are the seller, and there has to be a seller, as opposed to any other contraption. The contraption doesn't require a human being either owning it or existing. The contraption just works for itself. Now, this really should be broken down a little bit more, because it's true. If the owner of the, whatever it may be, the seller died, the transaction cannot go through. It cannot go through because it no longer belongs to him. Because once he died, then it belongs to whoever inherits him, or whatever the case may be, whatever happens with it, it's no longer his, and that's the reason why the transaction cannot go through. So it's true that you do need a seller in order to have a transaction. But there is really a difference between a seller having to be alive, but then there's another point that has to be thought about. And this is something which I have over here, a Machane Ephraim, who points this out from a Gemara. If a person makes a transaction, this type of transaction, and he says, I want it to be finalized tomorrow. So the seller sets everything up, deals with the buyer, says it's going to be finalized tomorrow. between today and tomorrow, the seller becomes sick and he's completely out of commission. We'll say he's in a coma, he loses his mind, he can't function as we would say as a bar das. He's not somebody who we can deal with his mind. He's completely out of commission. What happens with that transaction? So the Machane Ephraim makes an observation. He says, I have two Gemaras that seemingly are in conflict. There's one Gemara that says clearly in Baba Basra, the Gemara is there is discussing a father being believed to say that this child is my firstborn, and after the person dies, that firstborn gets two portions, it gets Pishnayim. So the Torah says in a pasuk, we believe the father to say he's the firstborn, even though it impacts the other children. The Gemara says, we don't really need a special pasuk to say he's believed, because he really controls his assets, even though once he dies, he doesn't control his assets. He could give away his assets while he's alive, so therefore it's logical that he should be believed to say, this is my firstborn. So the Gemara discusses that he can't necessarily always give away his assets, because what he currently owns he can give away. There may be things that become his assets after he speaks. Today he'll say it's my firstborn. Right before he dies, he acquires other assets. He could have an inheritance, whatever it may be. At that point in time, the Gemara explains to us he's not necessarily going to be in a state where he could give it away. Can you tell me? Well, I could just give it away. So the Gemara speaks about the fact that he could make a transaction to be finalized at that point, even if he's not in a state at that point to give it away. So the Machane Ephraim makes this observation that when you have a transaction, the involvement of the seller, it's true, he has to be alive. But does he have to be in a state of being able to be mentally involved? Not that a seller has to be thinking about it, but does he have to be in the state of being able to be part of a transaction? He says he has a Gemara that indicates he does not have to be in that state. Then he has another Gemara that indicates differently. So the Machane Ephraim breaks this down and tells us that when you're dealing with assets that he already owns and controls, he could set things up in a way that the transaction will go through, even if he becomes totally incapacitated, and at the time of the transaction being finalized, he is not capable of making a transaction. It could work anyway. Whereas if you're dealing with things he doesn't yet own, and there is a discussion whether a person can make a transaction on futures, if a person wants to make a transaction on future assets, there he has to be capable at the time when the future assets become his to actually make the transaction. So what this shows us is that there are different levels of involvement that a person has in a transaction. As much as we could say, I'll set things up in a way that everything's in place, it's just going to work, and I go to sleep, I'm not involved. So it's true, you don't have to be physically involved, you don't have to be actually mentally involved, but the halacha has different expectations and standards for involvement for the transaction to work. Does he have to be alive? The answer is yes, because if he's not alive, he's no longer authorized to make the transaction because it doesn't belong to him. I can't give away something that's not mine. Do I have to be in a state of mind that I'm able to make a transaction? The Machane Ephraim says you don't have to, as long as you owned it at the time when you set things up. That involvement I don't have to have. That means even though I am the seller, and even though at the time the transaction is happening, I'm the seller, but to be the seller doesn't require more than just the fact that he exists, even though he is not capable of actually creating a transaction at that time. If you'll be dealing with something that has to come into being, which means I don't even own it yet until that point in time, then he has to be capable of making that transaction. So coming back to Ricky Vager's question and the question of the Marshad, Ricky Vager's question is, there's a seller. The seller set things up on Erev Shabbos. When Shabbos comes and the transaction is finalized, what's his involvement? So the first question was, none. It's like setting up a trap. Avinezer said, that's oversimplifying it. You can't say no involvement. You have to be the owner. The next step, so he has to be the owner. Does that mean that he is considered involved in the transaction? Or he created a mechanism that allows a transaction to work without his involvement at all, even though he has to be alive? Then we have the next stage. He may not have to be, he has to be alive, but maybe he doesn't have to have any awareness, not only of the transaction, but perhaps no awareness of anything. Perhaps he could be somebody who's completely shut down, does not have any mental capacity, and the transaction works anyway, which indicates that really he's done everything that has to be done, and he's not considered a participant in the transaction. That's really the question of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Can you deal with him as a non-participant? Because we don't need him to even be capable of making a transaction, and therefore we can treat it as if everything was already done, or is the fact that he has to exist simply as the owner automatically make him a participant? Now, in the case of the Marshag, it's slightly different. In the case of the Marshag, the vending machine, so the Marshag himself writes, when he discusses his Shaila, he says it's not identical to Rabbi Kivager's case, because in Rabbi Kivager's case, everything was put into place before Shabbos. But when Shabbos comes, the transaction actually happens. And who made that transaction happen on Shabbos? The one who did it before Shabbos. In the vending machine, so he has an interesting way of looking at it. He's saying, who's involved in that transaction? The person who put out the vending machine obviously is ready to sell whatever's in the vending machine. So he's committed himself to sell whatever's there. But that commitment has done nothing till somebody actually takes it. In the case of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, the entire deal has been completed. The transaction has been completed. The buyer, the seller, it's done. It's just a question of time. In the case of the vending machine, the buyer has to take possession. Now, the possession that the buyer takes is only authorized because there's a seller who has agreed to sell. But the Marshag understands that we attribute the entire transaction to the buyer because nothing has been done to the object that's being sold till the buyer takes it on Shabbos. So on one hand, more is happening on Shabbos, but on the other hand, there's less involvement of the seller. And therefore the Marshag says that he feels a vending machine, everybody would agree, is mutter. Now, in the Marshag talking about Ricky Vager's case, this was interesting to me. I assumed Ricky Vager's case was everything was set up before Shabbos and nothing more has to be done. Because he brings an example to Ricky Vager of a Trumas Hadeshin who asks a question. When a person has a mitzvah, Pidyon HaBen, you have to give the Kayan the money. Now, if the 31st day is Shabbos, 30th day is Friday, 31st day is Shabbos, what do you do? So you can't do a Pidyon HaBen on Shabbos. You can't give the Kayan the money on Shabbos. So typically, we wait till after Shabbos. That's what we do. The Trumas Hadeshin says, can I give the money before Shabbos and tell the Kayan the money will become yours on Shabbos? Now, if you give the money early by Pidyon HaBen, it's clear in the Gemara that itself does not work till day 31. It's a discussion in the Gemara if the money was spent, if it works. If it doesn't work, it works on day 31. But nothing really happened before day 31. You can't do it in advance. But this person says, I'm not going to do it in advance. I'll hand him the money on Erev Shabbos, day 30, and tell him the money will become yours on day 31. Does that work? So the Truma Sadeshin says it should work, except you can't make a bracha on day 30 because you're not doing the mitzvah yet. You can't have a suda on day 30. You didn't do the mitzvah yet. Rabbi Kiveger says, but apparently the Truma Sadeshin is not bothered that you're making a transaction on Shabbos. Now the Marshak says, when he speaks about Rabbi Kiveger's question, he says, I'll give you another example of Rabbi Kiveger's question. He says, what if you have, and I don't know what this word means, because it's not Hebrew, I assume it's whatever language he spoke was their description of this transaction. But he says, Moichrim Ezedavar, you sell something, and it's set up that on Shabbos, the other side will decide who to sell it to. Because to me, it sounds like there's a bid being made, and they're going to be collecting the bids, and they'll decide when they're done which bidder to give it to. So the Marshag understands that this fits into Rabbi Kiveger's Shaila, that I already made my offer. They have to accept my offer, but they won't accept it till Shabbos, because they'll hear all the offers and decide which offer to accept. So the way he writes it is, when they accept on Shabbos, he feels that that would be included in Rabbi Kiveger's question. Now he writes, that's only because I know it's going to be accepted on Shabbos, whoever's bid they accept. To me, it sounds like from his description that once it's accepted, I am locked in and they are locked in. Now, I don't know enough about business. I don't know anything about business. So there are many questions that you have to ask a Rav. But I know that there are different ways that you can make transactions where you'll make an offer before Shabbos and the other party has to decide to accept your offer, possibly on Shabbos. When the offer is accepted, sometimes everything now is finalized and both parties are committed. Sometimes the acceptance of the offer now gives the other party the option of following through on the offer and however you pay for it. So I don't know the details of all these instances, but to me it seems it revolves around what this Marshag is speaking about. He's telling us when the offer is completed on Shabbos, he feels that's comparable to Rabbi Kiveger's question and the way we're explaining it, because there's a seller that has to stand behind, now in his case it's the buyer, but there's another party that has to stand on the other side of the table, ready to commit for the transaction to take effect. So even though that party, the Jew, doesn't have to do anything because he already made his offer before Shabbos, but on Shabbos it's becoming finalized. But as opposed to a mechanism that doesn't need a live person, A, it needs a live person. B, it needs a person who is going to become or is committed to this transaction. Rukh Vega writes, that to him is a question. The Marshak happens to hold that a vending machine is different. He writes here because it's not clear when it's going to happen. They can come anytime and take something out of the vending machine. That's the way he makes the distinction. I would have looked at it totally different. I would have said, when the other party is doing what has to be done, that is less my involvement, as opposed to a transaction that I completely orchestrated and just put into place. So the way he's presenting the question, transactions that are finalized on Shabbos, that I know will be finalized on Shabbos, he considers part of Rabbi Kiveger's question. Transactions which are pending, and the other side decides how to do it, when to do it, that the Marshag understands would be mutter. It's obviously a much broader topic, just opening up the questions. Enjoy the rest of your stay. Okay, I apologize that I can't stay for questions, but I have other Bukhram waiting. Bukhram.
Lunch is now being served in the Simpa Hall.
Sorry, I stopped.